My name's Matt, and I will be talking to Vivek Juneja about insights into marketplaces and managing customer data ethically.
But without further ado, I would like to jump to the first question. So I really enjoy talking with leaders with so many years of experience because you are already in tech for, I think, like 18 years, right?
Yeah, close to.
So and you work for different organizations. I mean, in Germany, South Korea, India, for like really huge corporations, for startup spirit corporations, I would say like Zalando, now On. So I think you have like an amazing mix of experiences. And like the first thing that I'm trying to understand, like based on your experience, do you see distinctive differences between the engineering approach in those different organizations and in those different countries that might be interesting that you could mention?
Definitely. I think from my experience over the last close to 18 years, every geography and the culture and the language obviously creates interesting constraints for how engineering problems are addressed. If you look at India, I think it started being a very service provider kind of setup, a lot of consulting, and essentially nobody says no to any requirement. So it's like, let us try to figure out a good solution to any problem that is thrown to it. And over the years, I think India has become more of a product organization style development, which means we're building more interesting products, really interesting companies coming from that space. And I think the diversity of consulting background and IT services really build interesting approach to offer to engineering problems, which means looking at problems from different areas, but not saying no to whatever comes to their attention. And if you look at East Asia applies brute force on really interesting problems that comes across to them. And they are first to adopt new trends and patterns. So they're super excited and they figure out how can a new trend and idea can be used to make us more efficient, to build interesting products. And they go complete brute force style, which means as much as possible, spending time, energy to get it out. And time to market is an extremely important element there, knowing that there are extremely big players in the ecosystem. Like I was in South Korea, so Samsung, LG, Hyundai, really big brands and big groups and conglomerates, which also increases the diversity around the talent available for smaller companies, because a lot of them come from working maybe 20 years in Samsung and they have a lot of interesting experiences. But also the challenges is around how they operate, especially it's a very hierarchical environment. And sometimes it is hard to challenge that an idea that comes from the top. But this is changing. I think a lot of that culture is also changing. So the approach is brute force, respect a decision that comes from the top, but just go all in. And if you come to Western Europe and also in the US, it's very entrepreneurial style. We want our engineers to be able to own things, challenge product decisions, challenge business decisions, be more engaged rather than purely passive and just do whatever is being asked to do. So which is a quite a stark difference from how you see engineering and how do you address engineering problems in these cultures. And I really enjoy that aspect as well. So as an engineer, when I was working as individual contributor, I really wanted to own a lot of the work I'm doing, more be more engaged rather than just being passive. And I think this is what living in this part of the world, but also working with a company here is really interesting, is an engineer in a role is so multifaceted.
I have another topic in mind related to what you said, like the multidisciplinary leaders, multidisciplinary approach, right? We have the product design, engineering, and now we see that many companies are a bit changing the way they operate. So they are going more multidisciplinary than a single discipline. So how do you see it? Do you see it in your environment?
Definitely. And I think this is a change for the good. And I've been like teaching, educating, and also mentoring engineers for a long period of time. And in my role, I tell them that the better solutions often don't come from it just thinking about technology. It's thinking about from an end customer, what are we optimizing on? What are the underlying incentives that are at play? And using that as a constraints to apply to how you solve the problem. And I think that only comes if from an engineering mindset, you're exposing to different disciplines. So you're working closer with product roles, with business, design, commercial, marketing. And I think that shapes your thinking as an engineer, but also exposes you to the type of complexities that you need to deal with. So I think the move around just focus on writing code is gone. I think the multidisciplinary thing really allows you to think in terms of trade-offs and constraints, and there which basically it improves the quality of something that you're building because you are thinking about a customer and the end impact early on rather than just focusing on brute force. Now, having said that, it doesn't mean this is like a silver bullet. I think disciplinary expertise is still important. You need people who have a depth in an area, but they also have empathy around other areas, associated areas Definitely. Around that. And that's where I think the interdisciplinary thinking is really useful, is you build empathy on why is someone thinking in that role. Unless you're building for one person and that's you, I think I would say any engineer needs to start opening up, talk to people outside your bubble. Maybe the podcast that some posts like you are hosting, some are really interesting for capturing how other people and leaders think about it. But for me, I think one thing that has the age of AI has taught us is the better multidisciplinary thinker we all are, the better we make good decisions. And as you rise up to take more ownership, more leadership roles in your organizations, in your communities, the effective leader is how multidisciplinary they are over time.
I really like your thought about the empathy. It's really nice set. So like to put in somebody else's shoes, like why they are making this kind of decision to understand really well. So this is something I think that we forget in the organizations. And I really appreciate this approach that somebody would like to understand kind of my context, right? So I fully agree with that. It's super important. And we are in the area of the engineering culture and different cultures. And I mean, let's talk about the vertical in which we are in the DACH region. So you worked for the Zalando. You work now for Onshoes. So one is German company. The second one is a Swiss company. And I'm thinking like about the differences in the engineering approach here. How do you see it? How do you experience it?
I think the engineering differences emerge from the history of these organizations. And I think the time I was at Zalando, it went through different waves. Essentially, there was a time where technology was the key area where Zalando made all the decisions from, which basically means technology ran the organization. So a lot of technology-centric decisions are being made. And I think it changed over time. Sometimes it's design-led, sometimes product-led. And I think these waves are very common as organizations understand the landscape and actually change and evolve over time. And also new leadership comes in. The engineering approaches, I think, especially when I joined Zalando, was like you have a lot of interesting talent internally. And people are very experimental. They understand what can be done, but it's essentially also go out in community and acquire the best ideas as possible. And also really raise the bar around engineering excellence. So a lot of emphasis was on around operational excellence, making sure your solution is not just made for Zalando, but anybody outside can use it. So a lot of focus on open source and internal sourcing. Yeah, really. So essentially allowing or inner sourcing, essentially making sure other teams can use your solutions without worrying about building their own. But again, the other approach was to really brute force building everything that they can. And I think this changed over time as more interesting leaders join in, where they've helped the organization focus on really thinking about the product problem that they're trying to solve and the design direction that the organization was taking. But ultimately for me, Zalando really built an interesting group of talent who were doing something really interesting in that time period in DACH region. And also they were doing really good job in terms of employer branding, in terms of attracting the right talent. And I think at some point in time, maybe even now, Zalando used to run the largest Kubernetes cluster in Europe. And they were one of the biggest customers of AWS and other big players in the market. So they had a lot of influence in that, which also means you get a really sense of community. And I think for me on came from a different history. So the focus was around elevating the experience for athletes and moving on to lifestyle customers. And the focus was really on getting the basics right, the product that you can use with your hands, feel it, which is very rare for someone like me if I work only with digital products. So I could really see how a decision that I make from the digital product side really influences someone who is actually enjoying a physical product. And we owned everything. We worked with right partners and who were able to influence the decisions right down to what color do you use on a physical product. And I think the culture moved from starting really small, very scrappy, to do everything possible to get to the organization as it is at the moment, which basically means we made a lot of decisions quite quickly. Engineers were super empowered. It almost felt like a startup within the larger organization, and they could move as fast as possible. And the engineering culture is, again, having more engaged engineers who really care not just about the technology they're using, but also the impact of that on the actual customer experience, the physical product they're building. So engineers who have a taste around how physical products should feel like. And you can only imagine if you're a smaller company, you will attract people who are really interested in the product that you're building. So we had a lot of runners, athletes, or people who really enjoy outdoor, and they had a voice. And I think this means the group of engineers really early on was very interested to not just focus on building the right technology, but really serving the mission. And I think it still stays today. The DNA is still here. And as we evolved over the last few years, we have started, it's a public company, so we have started thinking about the blast radius of the decisions that we make. But also now we have the opportunity to think long-term. So how do you make good decisions around what is commodity? Where should On be differentiating itself? What should we not just build our side, but rather partner with other interesting organizations and working as a partner rather than just be a consumer of a provider? And I think those are decisions that we are dealing with right now, which I think is a very interesting one, especially because we are thinking long-term. What does 2027, 2028 look like? And also bringing those decisions to the engineering teams who can start thinking about the cost of their decisions over a longer time period. And I think that's the situational difference between where I was before a few years ago at Zalando and now, that we started thinking about scale, but also sustainable growth. And also the beautiful part is a lot of the assumptions we made about the maturity of tools, the ecosystem has changed. I mean, look at the growth of generative technologies and the adoption of apps, adaption of cloud services, the choices that you have. I think we are in a better shape to really not have to have the baggage that other companies of this size could have. And therefore, we could move more agile and more in an elastic way to the longer term roadmap.
Then you mentioned like the long-term plans and visions. Could you tell a few words about it? Of course, like probably some stuff you cannot talk about, like the stuff that are available there. Like, what is your vision here? Because what I see from the outside as a consumer, right? I'm really amateur here. So I see the shoes. I see that my favorite tennis player, like Iga Świątek, is wearing the shoes. And Roger Federer is wearing the shoes, right? And you have the apparel, you have the clothing. But what is your vision for the next few years?
Again, this is a deep question. And I think from my perspective, again, playing a technology hat, On has a unique and beautiful place in the ecosystem. So one, it's trying to address the problem of scale in a very new way. So it doesn't mean that something has worked at the likes of Nike or Lululemon and would just work here. So we can have opportunity to really rethink about that. And I think one element that definitely would change an organization of this growth is the amount of products that we offer, the variety we offer, but also focus on sustainability. So how do we make the cost of our product on the environment as low as possible and make it as a good business model so that it is sustainable? And I think that's one of the very interesting focus areas for On. And I think it will remain even for long term. So if you look at 2022, 2023, we launched Cyclone, which is the subscription program for On. And that program allowed customers to come in to, let's say, subscribe to shoes, running shoes. And basically, this is a model that is unheard of. Now, from a digital product point of view, there are certain challenges that you need to solve for. How do you make a subscription program, which is a physical product, and you want to make sure that the end customer experience is quite simple across the different facets of the journey? But also, there are a lot of challenges around physical product development, recycling, logistics of that. So you can imagine the type of complexity you need to have. And as we go further in the future, we will see more investment in building sustainable products. I think we're doing a lot of investment in the R&D around that and building really sustainable models. Not just that it just works physically, but also the end customer experience is sustainable and the business models around that allows to run and keep investing the program in a sustainable way. I think that's, for me, is a standout long-term picture for On, is build good products that customers like, premium products, and focus on solving the problem around reducing the cost of that on the environment, but make it effective and sustainable. So it's not one big bang, one idea, but many different ideas that you can actually play with. The other is obviously investing in kind of technologies that allow you to think about adopting, for example, the technology advances in generative AI technology. So how do we provide our internal teams the capability to rapidly prototype and learn from different ideas early on? And I think this is a big push that all the companies, but also On, we will do, is really think about the amount of experiments we can run at scale so we can learn from it, feel fast, but also feel forward. So ultimately, we are improving the customer experience of it. And it's all, the last part is multi-channel, which what we are thinking in terms, again, from playing a technology person here, we want to be in different markets and think globally. Some regions have really unique needs. If you go to China and the APAC region versus South America versus North America and Europe. And what we want to do is allow the flexibility to tap on the local needs and local uniqueness while making sure that we're investing enough to keep our operations really solid. So investing in operational excellence or data, I think those are very interesting problems as we go long-term for On. And for customers, in the end, you really keep knowing On as a premium brand, as a premium product. It's the premium experience is touches on every aspect or every facet of that, not just the physical products, the store experience, the online experience, but every touch point that you have feels quite premium for you.
When I think about On, as I mentioned, as an amateur and somebody from the outside, or I explain it to my parents, right? This is the company which is producing, designing the shoes and like the clothing, right? So when you think about this from this perspective, you don't see the tech, right? If I talk to my father and describe the kind of environment in the company, he doesn't see the tech. So what I see from my perspective is, of course, the e-commerce. What I see, like, recently, like, if I compare Zara to H&M, H&M is behind Zara because the Zara invested in the mobile experience a lot. They invest in mobile shop. And I'm wondering, in your case, you have all the e-commerce ecosystem. You have, like, a different country. So, like adapting into different market is difficult. But is there something... from the tech perspective and engineering perspective, or products that you have, which is important for you as an engineering leader, which we don't see from the outside?
That's a great question. And I think we can spend hours talking about it. One aspect to think about is, like, what perhaps will not change over the long periods of the type of space we're on is. I think one, growth of products, growth of markets, taking advantage of personalized experiences, which are very localized. Those will not change. I think they will remain, which means we don't want to have a cookie cutter approach to every problem we solve across markets. So we want to leverage what we learn about the markets. For example, in Asia, we have a lot of customers who are on marketplaces or TikTok or Douyin. There are other platforms that you have in Asia, in China. And we want to take advantage of that spectrum of capabilities and what market offers. So that will not change. And I think now we start thinking about that to apply on technology. There are many interesting problems for me and for my teams and for our teams that we have to solve is how do you make different, how do you sustain different digital products in that space, which are highly localized and they have obviously operational needs, which means they need to work really fast and they want to be able to distinguish themselves away from the rest of the products that they have, which is investment in how we treat product data, how we manage our product data, how we allow distribution of product information. The other is experimentation muscle, which I just mentioned a few minutes ago. We want to be able to have our teams, engineering teams, product teams, anyone who is building products and on, to be able to invest in testing a lot of different ideas at the same time. Because we know the future is complex, there's a lot of different changes that are not going to stop. So the one big way of solving that is reducing the cost of making bad decisions and reducing the cost of testing and experimenting and learning as early as possible. This is, again, a technology problem as well, because how do you build right capabilities from a systems point of view that allows anyone inside our organization to be able to run a test, learn from it, create an insight, propagate that insight that then influences how future experiences develop. Now, that's a very complex, interesting problem, which I think should excite anyone who hears this information. The other is customer data, right? So we have a lot of customers who share information with us. How do we make sure that we leverage effectively that information with the permission from the customer, also complying with the local regulations, and yet build a product that looks highly personalized, where you come into On Experience, doesn't matter whether you come to On China or On Brazil or On Germany or On Canada or US, you feel that we understand the different context and aspects of context that you are, whether it's location, your habits, your preferences, your style of whatever activity that you choose to do with our products. And here, the challenges of technology is, again, making sure we are investing in operational excellence around customer data, data quality, governance around that, but also making our data available to different systems who can then use that to infer about our customer preferences and make basically recommendations to our customers based on the context. And this is, again, a very interesting scale problem, data problem. And I think anyone who enjoys that scale would be attracted to that because there's so much variety in it. And again, behind the scene, this is a very complex piece. To a customer, it should feel like, oh, I just expected. What is the big thing about it? And that's the experience you should be. They'll make it as simple for the end consumer that you don't have to worry about whatever is happening behind the scenes, the complexity of it. And I think that's the beauty of that is there are so many facets, and I'm just touching 1% of the entire iceberg of the type of interesting technology challenges. But for a customer, it should not feel like these are that big, because they should feel, oh, it's simple, it works. But as you start taking a peek behind the scene, you see very interesting problems come with high growth, high scale, different variety of customers, complexity of operating in a multi-channel, multi-region environment, and making right bets on what is commodity capability, what is a non-commodity capability, which means building the right talent to kind of work with our partners and providers in a sustainable way and co-create with them, right? It's not just about, hey, can you build this for us, but can we build it together? And I think those are problems which are worth solving. And I think these are not often exposed to an end customer. Last thing I would say is you see things and of these complexity coming out of customers when there's a problem. So a customer says, hey, my order was late by one day. What happened? And that is the first example that perhaps gives you a peek on, oh, there is this complexity. There are systems talking to each other, distributed environment. There are logistics around that. And that gives you a peek into that. But if nothing, there's no problem. then you don't see the complexity. It looks like a well-oiled machine. Everything just works beautifully. And I think that's hopefully we give our customers, we don't have to break things to see what's happening behind the scene. It just works flawlessly. And I think we only go from there.
I'm wondering about the market impact. I mean, like on a retail business or on your business. Like last year was pretty heavy. I mean, for the whole tech. So there's a lot of layoffs. There is a lot of change worldwide, especially for startups, right? You are not startup anymore. You are a really solid company, honest, really solid company. But the same like H&M versus Zara, right? The H&M is behind Zara because they haven't invested enough in the mobile experience for the clients. And I'm wondering, do you see the market impact of the last year? Do you see the like where the retail is going? What are the biggest challenges here? Especially from the engineering perspective. I know this is a really broad question, but maybe you have some thoughts here.
Yeah, I think for me, when I start thinking about these ideas, it's important to keep in mind that, again, leveraging what Ray Dalio said on how situations repeat in the history. And I think you can almost predict what's happening. So I think for me, I enjoy reading history, learning from history. If you don't read your history, you tend to repeat that history, especially the history that you don't want to repeat. And I think from an engineering point of view, what we want to focus on is be very lean and avoid the tendency to just build if you can build. And I think what it means by this is we don't have to be from a technology, again, there are a lot of aspects of it, but just purely from digital technology. We understand from a brand what are the unique differentiating factors for us. And we want to really go in and focus on those. And we don't want to get into the challenges of, oh, we have really strong engineers. Let's build it. Because the assumption is engineers love building. I think that's the facet that I think will also change as the market changes is you asked about multidisciplinary thinking. Is how can an engineer think about the long-term cost of the decisions on maintainability, operability, how do you decide about cost of decision, the total cost of ownership of building something versus buying something or build and buy. I think those are effective decisions, which I think all engineers will start with always tackle, but now will tackle more prominently. I think it's great. I tell to my teams, use cost as a constraint when you make decisions. And sometimes you will make a short-term decision to solve a problem that maybe in the long term was not the right decision, but if that was at that moment the right decision to make, go for it. But you can do that by knowing what are the elements of thinking about cost. Is it just about a provider cost? Is it just about a manpower cost? Is it just about an engineering cost? There are many elements to it. And I think what the last few years has always taught us and as teaching now is be very lean, think about effectively the cost of ownership, think about the long-term cost of what you're building and use this as a constraint. Don't get kind of paranoid about it, but use this as an effective constraint to build interesting systems. And don't worry about being able to know everything that a customer wants. So build as you learn, which means investing in experimentation. And I think this will not change regardless of markets. So as you can imagine, if you read history, the companies that can not just take advantage of trends, but really predict what's coming and what will not change for them and what will change can really stay longer. And they can survive this, you know, the drops and peaks and troughs of the markets. So what I think we are doing, again, as an organization, but also I could say from my side is helping our teams to be more efficient. Think about cost as a constraint, not just time. How do you make good decisions with different trade-offs in mind? And also avoid the tendency to just build everything. I say to teams again, the best code is the code that you don't write. The best solution is you don't have to build something. And I think those mindset has to come in play to really build effective systems, effective technology that are that lasts long, that can survive all those small changes and big drops over time.
Okay. I'm just wondering from the engineering perspective. You already mentioned you like experimenting, you like testing before implementing something. But like on the engineering level, so there are so many new tools, there are so many new technologies and languages, and it's so tempting to rewrite everything because something new is coming, especially like when you look at the JavaScript, right? Like you have new library, like literally each day, new framework, right? And the engineers are really excited. So you can experiment with that. But I'm always wondering when and how do you make the decision? Like, this is the right way. We should rewrite. We should change the technology. We should change the approach. Because this is really difficult part. When do you decide? And what is your decision-making process behind it?
Yeah. I'm assuming a lot of other companies and people in my role are facing the same challenges. So what I'm going to share is not a very unique secret sauce, but essentially how I believe most teams think about it. I think one, I always say to teams, think about who is being impacted if you make a decision about a tool or technology and it doesn't go well. If it's your team and the cost of reversing that decision of, let's say, using Rust for this is maybe another few weeks of rewriting it, but you feel it's a risk worth taking to really learn from it, let's do that. And take the advantage of that learning to really build that insight within the organization. So people come and say, oh, I use Rust for this use case and actually it works really well. But here are the cases where perhaps you should avoid. And that's a great learning. And I think we had a similar elements at Zalando where we adopted similar model like the tech radar from ThoughtWorks. We adopted and built our own tech radar. And I think a lot of organizations, including ourselves, will go in the same boat, is give guidance to our teams when they can make adopt decisions or assess decisions. But ultimately it comes down to, it's great to try out something new, but what happens if you make a wrong choice? If it's another few days of rewriting something, that's great. Let's do it. It is not the worst problem to solve. The other aspect is the amount of certainty you need on the output of a system, especially if you're building something that is in front of millions of customers and on day one, you need to battle test it with millions of customers, then the element that you need to be right is operational excellence, observability. So how effective is adopting a language, adopting a framework to the building blocks that are available when it's in production? So how mature is the tooling around observability, logging, error management, alerting? And how easy is for teams to instrument that? If it takes weeks to instrument, but great to write code, then something has gone wrong. Then either we are trying something completely new, which hasn't been battle tested. And I'm not saying that's bad, but again, look at the context. If you're building something that you perhaps can quickly prototype and test, and it's a new language, let's do it. Maybe take a week and bring back the insight. But if you're putting something in production in front of millions of customers, think about the operational aspect of it. Does the experience of building something in a new language allow other people to participate and contribute to that? If not, what does it take? So there's also an element of it. If I use Clojure in production, which I often had teams using it back in days, does everybody, it's not relied on just one person. Can other people jump on that code base? How effective is to onboard that people? And also with the element of co-pilots in wild, I think the challenge is not writing code in a new language. Is the more is a challenge is around operability, making sure people can understand, can reason, and hence the cost of making the right architecture choices, where picking up a new language or a tech is not a very expensive part of that decision. I love that part. So make architecture choices where cost of making a tool choice or maybe a language choice is not expensive. And I'm not saying it's a silver bullet, but that just solves a lot of the problems, which means you can iterate, you can learn and say, oh, that's great, but not for the use case. The other aspect for my team, again, living on the idea of being lean, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. is look at community, look at community adoption. If you take a new Ruby library or a JavaScript library that maybe one person is using and you're putting in front of customers, we need to be prepared to owning the evolution of that, which basically means contributing to that ecosystem, not just be a consumer, but also a participant, especially engaged participant. So wherever we invest in technology, we're not just standing by as a disengaged, you know, laid back participant, but rather engaged participant, which we are active on communities, steering the group, participating in the steering committees, proposing changes, putting up PRs for core contributions. So there, that shows our element of investment because we believe in the long-term evolution of that technology and we can trust when the group is making right decisions. So I think those are the factors I need to think about. And it comes down to making our teams more empowered so that they can effectively make the decisions. But beautifully, if you can make good architecture choices, the cost of using a new framework and library reduces over time.
Let's stay with those pain points a bit. And maybe like with your pain points. So you work as a head of engineering. Now you're an engineering leader. I assume this is a bit similar role to have to guide the engineering and be the leader for the engineering part. But I'm just always wondering, like, what do you type in ChatGPT or Google? What are your typical pain points that you have on a daily basis or on your like monthly basis or in general in this role? What are the typical challenges and pain points?
First of all, great question. When I type on ChatGPT, of course, I want to learn new things, and I think ChatGPT is a good gateway to explore new ideas. And I obviously use it sometimes to keep my learning cycle improved. The challenges that I face on an ongoing basis have obviously different time scales, like short-term, mid-term, long-term. And I think to make sure that I am not there fighting fires on short-term, making sure that they're the right people, right individual contributors, like leaders, who are able to keep the machine running and have constructive chaos and constructive debates on things, but keeping the machine on so we deliver, that is a short-term problem, right? So, and I'm hoping the setup of teams, how we work, and the incentives that I build for my teams allows them to keep the short-term things running where I don't have to come and fight fires. And that's one of my optimization functions as a leader, is how less I'm jumping in fighting fires for short term. And I'm letting my teams, my individual contributors, take on a lot of that, learn from it, contribute. The mid to long term for me is particularly is how I'm making my teams to make good decisions over time, especially as I mentioned, the long term decisions. And for that, they need a lot of good context. So engineering and technology vision, working with our technology teams and, you know, technology officers and product officers and working with them, the senior leadership, so that I can bring that context, helping the teams to make good trade-offs for mid to long-term decisions. And which also means working with our partners who we work very closely and making sure that we are effective in pushing them in the right direction. But also we take the opportunity of co-creation and we are leveling up the experience overall. So for me, the mid to long term is creating good decision-making systems for our teams, making sure that our teams have the right context so that they can derive good decisions out of that by making use of those trade-offs. And the element about growing the organization. So the assumptions that I have made when the team was 10 people, to now the team is 40 people or 80 people and 100 people will change. Then I will keep thinking about what will change and what will not change. For me, ownership, having the mindset about being in the details and being engaged will not change. What will change is cost of communication, keeping everybody informed. How do I build, working with a product counterpart and commercial counterpart, that the cost of communication is not too high and the right people have the right context at every level, but also building my community with the rest of the technology team. So we are shaping the engineering strategy and technology strategy for On. And that happens by building also good alliances within the organization. So those are mid to long-term challenges that I face.
Thank you for that. So I have two more questions. So I think we'll still manage in the time that we've planned. But the thing that I always like to ask are about the most important lessons learned that you have as an engineering leader throughout your career. So I wanted to tackle the thing that you mentioned about the system for the decision making and the centralization of the decision making, especially when the organization is growing. So it reminds me like my last year lessons learned that maybe, I don't know how you approach it with the teams, but my approach with the team is when we have the challenge or when we have the meeting, I always try to bring the people on board there, the right people. And my biggest lessons learned was last year that I need to be silent on those meetings. So if I will make the decision, if I will just, change the flow of the discussion or the people expect from me that I will make each time the decision or each time I need to be involved in the meeting. But what I want to create, because the organization is growing, is I want to have the people making the right decision, and they are already making better decision than I am. So like keeping like not talking during those meetings was really, really hard for me as a co-founder, and like because I was involved in everything. But it's changed completely how we operate the company. So I'm just wondering, like getting back to the question, you as a technology leader, your biggest lesson learned that you have taught like throughout your career.
It's such a beautiful question, and I'm glad that you shared openly on how you are dealing with it. So appreciate that. You're absolutely right that when you are senior most member in a meeting, especially if it's a decision meeting, it's very easy to speak first and influence the outcome of that. What I've learned over the last many years is, especially what works in a very small setup may not translate everywhere. So be aware of that. So what has worked for the sizes of Google and maybe Meta and others just does not naturally apply to everyone. With the size of organization I have right now, it's very hard to bring everybody in at the same time, at the same place to make the right decision, right? So otherwise your groups could be quite big because there's subject matter experts and other people who are quite have a vested interest of that. So for me, what I look at is one, if I am being invited for a meeting where we make a decision, I assume that there's a lot of preparation that has gone in. So either there is a memo or something written down, and the person and the group of people who are closest to the problem have thought about it and deeply discussed, debated on that before bringing it up to me, which means giving in time and attention to whatever has been produced, whether it's a document or whatever artifact has been created. If you go to a design reviews, you see Figma reviews and comments, and you can look at that, whatever helps to make a right decision. So do we have the right elements and the preparation for making a decision? And that is number one for me to think about. My also second way is to really build good decision makers over my teams and for my existing teams and my teams that people will come in the future, which basically means, am I helping and coaching individual contributors and other leaders to become good decision makers? Which also means thanking them to say, do they recognize when they have to make a decision? Often what we realize is we just have to make a decision and we just go back and forth. Sometimes you may not even have to make that decision or to make it too expensive to have big meetings. So recognizing when you have to make a decision and is it the right timing is also another aspect that I think about a lot for myself, but also the decisions that I'm part of. Timing is all important, right? So if you're making a decision that will impact two people out of a 100 people team, and that decision can be made by someone who is closest to the people, they have all the information, why not? What is the cost of making that decision? And what happens if the decision is wrong? You could reverse it. You need to just know the impact of that. Often people decisions are harder. So what I also look at is giving the opportunity for leaders and ICs who work with me is use sounding board, use your people who will challenge you constructively. find them early on and build alliances with them. So you already get like a challenger input without reading. And that gives you a good element to kind of bounce back how you're thinking about it. The other element is structure. I think especially our teams are in different locations. So if you're making in time to open up a decision and you want to make a decision, everybody knows about it and they're prepared and they have the right amount of involvement in that. So it should not be a surprise for people coming to that meeting and say, oh, we are making a decision. I was not even aware of it. So again, especially if you're involving people to come together, it's very important for me and for people that I work with is we're making it really efficient, but also useful for them into the room. And if we don't have the right people, we don't have the right context, we just say, oh, we need that person or we need that context. Let's make sure we close the loop as early on. Can we get them on a call immediately to make sure that we can make a decision? So for me, think about, as you rightly said, the bias that you create when you speak first. Making sure the team knows when to make a decision, when to escalate, when to bring them in. If I'm making a decisions all the time for decisions that actually my leaders and IC should have been made, then that's a opportunity for me to coach and figure out what are the incentives at play, what are the contexts that they're missing. And the other is making sure you're effectively using different artifacts, and whether it's a write-up or Miro, and you're involving the right people at that time, which basically means when you make a decision, you're very clear. Everybody knows about it. There's no surprise. So investing the time to prepare for it. And the last point on this is people often make a decision and forget about it. How do we get back in the from a future point and just say, who made this decision? What was made? What's the impact? And is it the right time to challenge and open up the decision? So some form of decision log, some form of material that people can go back to. And often good decisions that are made are lost because we did not do a good job in distributing and socializing those decisions. So that's also one very important element that often is not thought to, and or is thought too late in the process. So think about distribution cost, maintainability cost, so that people can come back to it and refer to it. So, oh yeah, that decision was made by this person. It's applicable at the moment based on the constraints it had, or it's right time to challenge and open up this decision because of the assumptions that were not valid anymore.
Thank you very much, Vivek. The last question that I have, like really, really short, are there any books, conferences, resources, blogs that you would recommend fellow tech leaders that have been particularly helpful for yourself on your path?
Obviously, recommending your podcast. I've heard colleagues of mine who were on your show, so really appreciate you bringing them there. And I think instead of specifying a particular book, a particular podcast, which means I will say I'll be doing a bad job of not suggesting other, I would say try exposing yourself as diverse mediums and thoughts as possible. So for me, I read philosophy, history, human psychology. I read about health. I read about the world wars. I read about opinions from people and sometimes books that and offer authors who I do not agree with. Even podcasts, even books, audiobooks, whatever it takes. And I think over time, you'll figure out which is the right medium for you, for what right context. So for example, you may realize that maybe you enjoy reading philosophy books and more applicable instead of hearing a podcast about it. So medium is very important based on the type of content you're consuming. So I would just say instead of picking up a right podcast, expose yourself to as much diverse content as possible. Leverage ChatGPT there. That's a great way of consuming. Also just making sure your biases are right and you can get some bit of information early on. Read a variety of books. Going back to your point about multidisciplinary thinking, I'm reading books about product management, how do you think about product strategy, making strategy decisions, how do you think about human biases and psychology, how great leaders in the past have thought about that. As much content as possible, but just stick with it. So sometimes people pick up a thick book and just say, oh my God, I have to just be with this book for years. You don't need to. You can pick up the right chapter, that part, and just stay with that. And sometimes all it takes is one idea from that maybe 800-page book for it to matter. So leave the books and move on, but try to build a great mental model of how you take on different ideas and comes together. But it comes around making sure that you're also very rigid about how you're consuming and what you're consuming it, but make it diverse. It's like people asking for food choices. Make it as diverse as possible. Be about good habits in food. Same thing with the content. Same thing with media. And obviously, take on what other people who you believe, who you kind of look for, look up to, what are they consuming? And that might be a good starting point for you.
I absolutely love the answer. And this is pretty often, I heard it pretty often during the podcast, that a lot of people are saying like, hey, maybe this will be surprising, but I read the books from like philosophy part, from like outside of the bubble to get like different perspectives. So I fully agree with that. And I fully agree regarding the business books. I changed my approach like a few years ago. So I read only, and I'm looking for the chapter where there is solution to my problem, because I read those books to find the problems to find the solutions to my problems. So what I started to do, I start first to type like on YouTube, like the summary and the title of the book. And like in 5 minutes, I have the answer if the context there is something that is will solve my problem. And then I dig deeper, like the chapter that is solving my problem. So I absolutely love the answer that you gave here. And Vivek, in general, I think it was a great talk. I really enjoy it. It took us a bit longer than expected, but it was super interesting. And I'm really thankful that you have found time and we have such a really interesting conversation. So thanks for today's talk.
Thanks, Matt, for reaching out and having this conversation. Really appreciate it. And I hope we were able to get the right message to the audience through this and really attract good people.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.